Oh, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. Stuck in the middle with you, Steeler's Wheel. Our guest, who I haven't introduced yet, uses that to introduce his show. So it's a great song, and I've always loved it. So I thought I'd play it in his honor and his recognition. So welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. We are now streaming live on the internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the listen button. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and underwriters like yourselves, so don't hesitate if you like what we do. You can go to our webpage one more time, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button. Keep us on the air and keep the good programming that we have going out. Well, today's show is pre-recorded. I won't be taking calls in the studio as I usually do, but you can send me an email at unspun@kkrn.org if you have some comments or questions. Well, our guest is Brad Freeman of Brad Blog. I made a mistake the last time when I introduced him, of Brad Blog. He's with us today. He's an investigative journalist, blogger, political commentator, broadcaster, author, troublemaker, muckraker. He's a Common Wheel Institute fellow and the publisher and executive editor of the Brad Blog. He's a regular contributor to Salon, National Mem of the Progressive Truth Out, Trial Lawyers Magazine. He's written for Mother Jones, The Guardian in the UK, Slate, Huffington Post, Alternate, editor and publisher, and Computer World, Columbus Free Press, and Harvard's Nieman Foundation of Journalism, and many other publications. Brad now has an international radio presence as a host of both the Green News Report and Bradcast, a daily radio show on KPFK in Los Angeles. He's also carried on numerous other shows, maybe, or other stations, I should say, and maybe he'll tell us more about that during the hour. He is a 2010 Project Censored Award winner, recognized for outstanding investigative journalism for his coverage of the mysterious death of Mike McConnell, Karl Rove's election thief. He has been in several documentaries, including Murder Spies and Voting Lies, Uncounted, The New Math of American Elections, Stealing America, Vote by Vote, among others. He has written many exposés on electronic voting machines and other instances of what he calls electoral dysfunction. Among his latest blogs are Republican Voters Warming Up to Climate Science and How Corporate Media Missed the Trump Train and Still Ignores Sanders. Brad, welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling.
Hey, Doug, great to be here. Thank you very much.
I really enjoy your show, and I really have to say I'm in awe. You're on so many stations, and you're so well-received. It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Well, you're very kind to say so, although when you played that theme music, here I thought I was coming in to have a nice chat for an hour, and suddenly I sat up and felt like, oh boy, I better get to work, because it sounded like the show was starting.
Well, so. you won't have quite that much pressure here, but,
okay,
but I love that. I love your music anyway, so I thought it's a great song, so I thought I'd give it
a little air
and make you feel at home. The idea was to make you feel at home.
Much appreciated.
Anyway, I congratulate you on your success with your shows, and I think they're both important shows. I think you're like me, that you understand that climate change is coming to a theater near you soon, and we probably need to be a little bit more responsible in our behavior and get moving on something that might actually help down the road.
So. Well, that's a very, very kind way to put it. I think something is already happening. I think the crisis is upon us, and I know you're up in Northern California, but I can tell you down here in Southern California, it remains dry as a bone, and the El Nino that we were promised that was going to, that frankly, actually, we've been promised for the last two or three years, this El Nino is coming, it's coming. It didn't come, at least not down here in Southern California, and it's really bad. And of course, that's obviously just one tip of this huge climate crisis iceberg, unfortunately, that we're facing. So you know, hopefully we do get the word. We try to get it out, whether it's on on the broadcast or on the Green News Report, to just help people understand how serious this is and how difficult it's going to be to do anything about it once the worst effects of climate change start kicking in and become even more apparent than they are already. I mean, if you look what has went on over the past week up in Fort McMurray, up in Alberta, mm-hmm. Canada, ironically the home of the tar sands, where up in Canada, subarctic, and they're having 90-degree temperature, 90-degree days in the middle of May. It's insane. And, of course, it's on fire. And, you know, it's right there where the tar sands oil is. The entire town is pretty much an industry town of the tar sands oil. And so it's horrible what has happened up there, and it's ironic, but that's kind of what we're dealing with, and it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, I've had Paul Beckwith and Guy McPherson on. I think you know who they are. You probably have had them on, too, if I'm maybe. But if you haven't, they're uh-huh. some of the ones that were early people saying, we're almost to the tipping point, or we're already there. And and he just put he's a Canadian, Paul Beckwith, and uh-huh. he's pretty much fire alarms going off. He's, you know, we've got to get serious about this and stop fossil fuel use. And he's even going to climate engineering because he's so fearful about what's coming. And the Arctic, he claims the Arctic is the key. And he's probably right. And he's now predicting that before the end of this year, there will be no Arctic ice. Pretty scary.
It sure is, and I, you know, the question is always, how do you get that information out there? And I had on a few days ago, actually, John Sutter from CNN, and he is he writes on their website, and he's doing a great job. He's got a project there called 2 Degrees, and he's doing a great job of reporting on this climate crisis. But I had him on the show, and I said, John, you know, you're doing a great job on the website, but CNN, you know, there are more advertisements for fossil fuel companies than there is climate stories on CNN on air. You know, so what's the problem there? Why are they willing to cover it on the website, but when it comes to airtime, broadcast airtime, they almost never talk about it at all? And, you know, it was a little uncomfortable because he works for CNN, so I couldn't press him too hard on that point. But, you know, it underscores the fact that broadcast media just doesn't, the corporate broadcast media, just doesn't cover these stories that are so important. You know, they're fixated on Donald Trump and every dumb thing that he has to say instead of, you know, the stuff that is really, really scary. Once you talk to actual scientists and you find out what's going on, as you have, you know, and you find out what's going on, and you find out that, look, we don't have time for messing around and debating, whether climate change is a hoax or not. By the time everyone on the planet realizes that, no, it ain't no hoax, it'll be too late to do anything about it, by and large, and then we're really screwed. So, you know, thank you for talking to these people, talking to these scientists, trying to get the word out, trying to figure out how to reach people with this. We do it on our Green News Report, and the trick is, and we do that, it's nationally syndicated, but it's, you know, 6 minutes twice a week. And the trick is, well, how do you make these stories interesting? And I do understand that it is hard to make them interesting, to present them on air, in our case on radio, you know, in a way that makes them interesting, makes people want to listen, makes them funny or something, you know, so that people don't turn it off and say, oh, okay, it's another environmental show, blah, blah, blah. That's a challenge. So I understand that the corporate media has that same challenge, but that is no excuse for them failing to even try to meet that challenge. You know, at least we try, right?
Yeah, and I think we're doing what we're supposed to do, and unfortunately they've forgotten their role as informing the American people. And I'm with you. I try to scare them, quite honestly. I think, you know, hey, if you're not paying attention, wake up. It's scary. Uh-huh. It's coming, and you need to be ready. And whoever you're electing, which brings us back around to electile dysfunction, whoever we're electing has got to be serious about this. We don't have time. We really don't have time to mess around anymore. So
That's true. And you've got one of the candidate, obviously the presumptive GOP nominee now, Donald Trump, is actually out there actively saying climate change is a hoax created by the Chinese, somehow or another created by the Chinese to hurt the U.S. It doesn't even make sense, his theory. It doesn't make sense because he doesn't really have a theory. Basically, he repeats whatever nonsense he's heard the night before on Fox News, and over on Fox News, you know, they're completely in thrall of the fossil fuel industry. So they've been playing along with the actual hoax, being put forward by the fossil fuel industry. So you got one of the two nominees for president of the United States, and we obviously don't even know who the one on the Democratic side is going to be, but we know that whichever of the Sanders or Clinton, it's going to be a candidate who understands climate science at least marginally. But on the Republican side, you've got a very real contender who has, by the way, I think a much greater possibility of being elected as president of the United States than people will give than people currently give credit for, who is a complete denier, who has absolutely no clue what is going on. That is what is really scary, much scarier than, frankly, who Donald Trump is himself as a pathological liar and crazy person. Just the idea that he does not even understand what is happening to our planet.
Well, and of course, the media is complicit, and my friend Ray McGovern calls the fawning corporate media is serving the people that it has always served, but now it's so blatant and so damaging to our nation. I'm amazed when I watch and I listen to your show and I go, the whole system just stinks so badly. And that might be a good thing, because if we can get the young people out and the people that just have had enough and get them out there, and maybe we can see a different scenario than the one this false choice of Trump and Hillary Clinton, man, that's not a choice I want.
Well, it may be the choice you have. Now, you live in California, so California voters actually have some other options. We can vote for, there will be a green candidate on the ballot, and California is likely enough to not vote for Donald Trump that I think people can feel more comfortable voting for a green candidate. But, I don't know what I would do if I was in a state like Ohio or Florida or Pennsylvania. I know a lot of people don't like Hillary. I'm no fan of Hillary. But boy, if the choice is Hillary or Donald Trump, and you're talking about, the planet in the balance, say what you will about Hillary Clinton, she would like to see us go 50% renewable energy by 2030. Now, I don't think that's enough. I don't think that's going to get us there. I don't think that's nearly enough. But if the alternative is climate change is a hoax created by the Chinese,
excuse me, I have to laugh. Yeah, that's pretty absurd.
Well, it's hard, when I hear, people say, oh, I've had it with the lesser of two evils notion, and, I hope Trump does become, I'll vote for Trump, or I'm not going to vote at all, if it's Hillary versus Trump. I understand that. I will fight for your right to be able to vote for whoever you want. I will fight for your right, by the way, to not vote at all if that's what you want, but I don't know that that ends up moving the ball forward as much as people think it does, or, you know, when they talk about moving the ball forward, the Bernie or bust people talk about, you know, well, we'd be better off with the Donald Trump because everybody would see, you know, the world would go to hell in a handbasket and we'd see what the problem is and then we'd fix it. You know, I'm not so sure. I don't know that we have that kind of time. And so it's tough choices this year, no doubt, for the electorate, and it would be nice if our corporate media did a better job of informing that electorate, as you say, and calling out a guy like Donald Trump and say, what is your evidence, Mr. Trump, that climate change is a hoax that is being run by the Chinese? Because here is the evidence that shows quite plainly it is not a hoax, it is very real, and though you will be dead soon, Mr. Trump, a lot of us are going to have to live with this horrible world that you have left behind. I would like to see that happen on CNN, wouldn't you?
I would, and let me remind our listeners here for want to break in anyway. You're listening to Unspun Experiment Truth Telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Brad Friedman, investigative journalist, renowned blogger and radio show host. We're discussing different aspects of the ongoing election and climate change and what we're looking at here in this presidential campaign. So you can't call in, unfortunately, but I just wanted to let you know what you're listening to. And now back to our interview with Brad Friedman. Yeah, and there's some scenarios. I know you went over them in your show a few days ago. And I think I have a lot of people here locally, even though we're a pretty conservative rural area, but a lot of my friends are the, you know, feel the burn people. Boy, they're out there on the weekends on the corners. They're talking to people. They're registering people. They're trying to get the young people involved. So, and a lot of people are trying to, and, you know, corporate media has just already told us who our choices are. It's either Trump or Hillary Clinton. But you expressed, and you had somebody on your show the other day that expressed, in a scenario where Bernie could actually become president. And I thought maybe you could, you know, run that by our listeners, because I think I'm really, a lot of them would really like to understand how that might come about.
Well, for one, yeah, you're right. It drives me crazy that the corporate media has already decided that Hillary Clinton is going to be the nominee when we have not voted. Hello, we have not voted out here in California, and the voters in Kentucky haven't voted, and in Oregon, you know, haven't voted, and North Dakota, South Dakota, New Jersey, Montana, Washington, D.C. I kind of think those people should be able to express their voice before the corporate media goes out and pronounces anyone as the nominee. You know, you still have candidates running. Let the people vote. Now, with that said, obviously it's a tall order at this point for Bernie Sanders to be able to overtake Hillary Clinton when it comes to the pledged delegates, and which is something else the corporate media has been misreporting now for months and months. This notion that these so-called superdelegates, these party insiders and elected officials and so forth, that they have somehow cast their vote. They have not voted. There, you know, they can go to the media and say, oh, yes, I love Hillary Clinton or I love Bernie Sanders, but that is not a vote. Those superdelegates do not cast their vote until the convention in July in Philadelphia. And so for the media to be misreporting these numbers the way they are, to be misreporting these superdelegates as if they have actually cast a vote, I think is you know, just horrible way to misinform the electorate. Okay, so with all of that said, I interviewed Seth Abramson the other day, and he has an article. He's a columnist at Huffington Post. He's a professor, assistant professor up at the University of New Hampshire. He's an attorney. And the case that he is putting forward, I think the article that he wrote at Huffington Post was something like, Bernie can still win the nomination. No, seriously. That's that was the headline. His case is that, look, over the next several weeks, we've still got a bunch of states to go, and Bernie Sanders has been winning quite a few of those states, Indiana, West Virginia, Next week, it's Oregon and Kentucky, and he has a very good chance of winning those states. He has a possibility out here in California and some of these other states, and that going into the convention in Philadelphia in July, if Bernie Sanders has won 18 of the last 25 states, the majority of states since Super Tuesday, including California, if that happens, that it's going to be very difficult for Hillary Clinton to declare herself the champion of the American people, and at that time, the case will be made to the superdelegates that Bernie Sanders is a has a much better chance of beating Donald Trump. And we've got a lot of polls now that there's been polls for months and months, obviously showing that Bernie Sanders beats Donald Trump by far larger numbers than Hillary Clinton does nationally. And now we've got a recent poll out from Quinnipiac this week showing that that Hillary Clinton is now tied with or losing to Donald Trump in three key swing states, in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida. And she's actually losing to him in the state of Ohio. And in all of those cases, Sanders is doing better than Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. He actually is beating him in Ohio. And so that's the case to be made coming out of this primary election. At least that's the case that Seth Abramson was putting forward. I believe it's the case that Bernie Sanders will try to put forward if, in fact, this scenario happens where he's able to do to essentially run the table from here on out, and actually going back to the beginning of May because of Indiana and West Virginia, if he's able to run the table, including California, and these polls continue to show that he would do better against Donald Trump, the case will be made to the superdelegates, hey, now that it's time to cast your vote, you need to vote for Bernie Sanders, otherwise you may be giving up the White House to Donald Trump. And that's, I think, a plausible scenario. Sanders is still going to have to do well in these elections. But if he does well, I think it's a plausible case to make and a reasonable case to make, particularly if these polls keep coming in showing that Sanders is doing so much better against Donald Trump, and particularly in some of those very key swing states.
You've been very good at finding questionable results in electoral races. And when I was watching the returns from the New York primary, the polls, things didn't seem to jive. And so I'm wondering, how clean have the primary elections been, regarding different states? I mean, is everybody pretty happy with this, or do we have a lot of tampering with the votes during these primaries?
Well, of course, it depends who you ask. If you ask Bernie Sanders supporters, many of them are quite certain that Hillary Clinton has stolen the entire primary election from them. I have not found evidence to support that, frankly, not much. What we have had a mess of a primary election, and we've had the biggest problem that I've seen, at least that makes this different from previous elections, is the trouble that people have had voting, the long lines that we've seen in state after state, and for different reasons often in each of the states. In Florida, where electronic poll books broke down. In North Carolina, where they've instituted this new photo ID restriction law. Up in Wisconsin, where they also have a photo ID restriction law. In New York, where thousands of voters were purged from the rolls. In Arizona, where they changed the number of polling places from more than 200 down to back in 2012 to just 60 in 2014. So in all of these cases, you've had these terrible problems of people being able to even access the polling place at all to cast their vote. And then once they do cast their vote, we have the same problem that we've had now for Well, unfortunately, more than a decade that I've been on this particular beat, which is that our voting systems, which whether they're electronic voting systems or electronic tabulation systems, they are pretty much impossible to oversee. So whatever the results end up being reported the next day, those are pretty much going to be the results. If you have a question about it, in many of these states where they still use 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting, if you have a question about those results, there is literally nothing that you can do. You are just stuck with whatever the computers tell you. In states where we have paper ballots, like most of California, those paper ballots are still scanned by computers. They're not actually counted by human beings. They're tabulated by computers. And the results are either wrong or right. There's no way to know unless we actually count those paper ballots by hand. That's still the same mess we're in. So a lot of cases, a lot of states, you know, you've got, problems occurred and people are yelling and screaming that it's election fraud. In many of these cases, it's Republican states that are purposely trying to keep people from being able to cast their votes. In other cases, where the results come in and they are counter to what various, you know, supporters think they should be, they want to find out, was the race tabulated correctly? And in some cases, it's impossible. And in other cases, they fight to do it, and they find numbers that contradict the election night results. And yet, for example, in Illinois and in Chicago, and they just, the Chicago Board of Elections just approves those numbers as is, even though they did a 5% post-election audit, and the 5% post-election audit did not match the official results. They still approved it. And by the way, that happens all around California as well when we see post-election audits in various locations. So fighting like hell to oversee our own results and our own tabulation, that still remains a problem even in 2016, even after all of these years of trying to warn people about these problems and trying to say, hey, don't wait until after the election, because guess what? By then it is too late. But as far as what I have seen this year, a lot of the, the Bernie Sanders supporters believe that, it's been stolen from them. I have not seen evidence that really supports that case. I've seen a lot of problems, but frankly, I haven't seen a whole lot that is terribly different from what I've seen in previous years when it comes to the tabulation of votes. But certainly when it comes to access to the polling place, it's been a really rough year, and I am quite worried about what is going to happen in November.
Well, we're getting pretty close to the bottom of the hour, so I want to do a little community service here and let people know that the last day to register in Shasta County or to change your party affiliation is May 23rd. And if you want to opt to vote by mail, you need to do that before the end of May, before May 31st, which is not very far away. So you people that are listening, and this show will be aired on the 14th, you need to consider getting involved and getting down there and taking care of this, because you may go to the voting to polling place and discover, oh, I'm not registered, or I'm not registered under the right party, and that might affect some of your options at the polls. So our primary, California's presidential primary, is June 7th. That's the first Tuesday in June, and it's going to be an important one, as Brad has just noted. A lot of delegates in California, and that could be the real swing for whoever you choose. I'm not going to name anybody, because I can't, and that's not my place. I'm pretty much nonpartisan. For more information, you can contact your Registrar of Voters. You can go online to www.elections.co.shasta.ca.us. That's a long one. Or you can Google it, Shasta County Registrar of Voters. Or you can call, there's a state number here to get information from the state. It's 1-800-345-VOTE. That's a little bit easier. 1-800-345-VOTE. And you can, you can get the booklet that shows all the different things that we're voting on and positions, and so go there for more information. And you're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today, Brad Freeman, investigative journalist, renowned blogger, muckraker, troublemaker, radio show host, and all-around good guy. And we're discussing different aspects of the ongoing primaries and, of course, the presidential election. Go ahead.
Doug, can I underscore something that you mentioned on the registration deadline out here in California? Which you're right, it is May 23rd. But what I want to make sure that people understand, because this has been a problem in elections past, and I think it's going to be a problem again this year. If you want to vote in the Democratic primary, whether it's for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or anybody else, if you want to take part in that, you either have to be registered as a Democrat or registered as a what they call declined to state here in California, and or non-affiliated. A lot of people think that they are independent when in fact they are actually registered with the American Independent Party, which has its own primary. And if you happen to be accidentally or even on purpose registered with American Independent Party, which is this far right-wing party, you're going to be disappointed on Election Day because you're not going to be able to vote in the Democratic primary. Now, in order to vote in the Republican primary, you actually have to be registered Republican. But if you want to vote in the Democratic primary, you can be Democratic or decline to state. So you might want to check your registration, make sure you're still on the rolls, that you haven't been purged, and make sure that you're affiliated with the party that you think you're affiliated with, or that you're affiliated with no party at all. I know there's just a huge number of people that are accidentally registered as American Independent Party. When they registered, they thought they were choosing, to be independent, but in fact they were choosing to be a part of that particular party, and that's caused a lot of problems in the past. So check your registrations, people, even if you think you are registered.
And you can do that. You can also change your party affiliation online. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, they can make that effort. It's not like you have to drive 30 miles and go to the registrar's office, which you can do if you want to. But, yeah, great point, because I know that happened. I worked in the polls for about 12 years. I quit this last year, but I wanted to have a real understanding of how they work. And right down to that digital tabulator made by Sequoia, I had faith in the system. When I got to there, I went, well, wait a minute. How do you know? Maybe who's access? Who maintains this machine? Do they upgrade the software? And what does that mean? So many ifs there. And I know you've covered all of that. The in the old days, not too long ago, we used to have polling, exit polling, and they were pretty good indicators. And that's all changed, hasn't it?
Well, yes. It has changed in that the exit polls used to be regarded as a red flag or a yellow flag, if you will, for potential fraud. And now they're not used that way at all. The exit pollsters don't use them that way at all. The media doesn't use them that way at all. And that has led to some concerns and both concerns and confusion. Again, I hate to go back to sort of beating up on the Sanders supporters, because I like the Sanders supporters and I like Sanders. But they have been focusing a lot on the exit polls showing that Bernie Sanders should have won in many of the states where he ended up being announced the loser according to the results of the elections. Now, I've seen a lot of people regard that as, all the proof they need to declare fraud in the election. Well, it doesn't really mean there's been fraud in the election. There's a lot of reasons where the exit polls could be different from the final results. And it drives me a little crazy when the media just presumes that, the results are always correct and the exit polls therefore must have been wrong. But we don't know that the results are correct, the official results as reported. As I've mentioned, before, they're almost all done by computer tabulators, and they are almost completely unverified by human beings. So we don't know if the results are right or if the exit polls are right. It's also not necessarily fraud. These machines, you mentioned these Sequoia machines that you guys use up there in Shasta County, the optical scan computers, they're terrible. They're horrible. They get it wrong all the time. As a matter of fact, I remember a couple of years ago down in Palm Beach County, Florida, the very same Sequoia optical scan systems that you guys are using in Shasta County announced, had an election, I want to say it was in March of 2010, it's been a long week, but somewhere around there, maybe it might have been 2012, in any event, in a municipal election, it announced three of the losing candidates to be the winner. The very same optical scan computers that you guys use, made by Sequoia, announced three election results completely wrong. And the only reason we know about that is because in one of the races, the computers had announced some 19-year-old kid to have won, that nobody had ever heard of, to have won, and the supervisor of elections down there in Palm Beach was smart enough to look at it and say, wait a minute, this does not seem right. I think we need to hand count these ballots and make sure it's right. And she caught it, and in fact, the computer had declared the wrong winner in three different elections. Those are the same ones that you guys use in Shasta County. And, I don't know what they do as far as counting the paper ballots up there, by human beings, or if they simply trust whatever it is that the Sequoia computers say, but I do know that after that happened in Palm Beach County, Florida, the company, Sequoia, which has now been purchased by a different company, but the company came out and said, yes, this is a problem, this is a bug in our software, and it exists in all of the Sequoia voting systems and tabulation systems in use across the country. So, no, I wouldn't have much faith in those results as they come off of those computers unless they're hand-counted by actual human beings. But at the same time, when we see an exit poll, showing different results than the actual election results, that doesn't necessarily mean it's fraud. It does mean a red flag or a yellow flag, and it does mean that we should go in there and count those ballots and find out how the voters actually voted. But apparently that's an incredibly radical idea these days.
I believe the criteria here, it was a few years ago anyway, that it had to be if they were so close, within 1% or something, that was the flag to actually do an audit. And mm-hmm. and then the audit had to, if it stayed, the audit showed that it was pretty much even, then they would count all the votes. But I don't think that's ever happened. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's ever happened.
Well, it may not have happened up there. I know it's happened down here. And that law, that post-election audit law that was in place, that was put in place by Secretary of State Deborah Bowen, I believe it was an experimental process, experimental routine, and has since expired. So I don't know anymore what the California laws are for post-election audits of that type that we had. We may not have them at all anymore. It may be now on a county-by-county basis as they choose to do it. But even when they did it, by law, we're talking about 1%, 3%, maybe 5% of the ballots actually, people bother to count. That ain't enough. That ain't enough. I have seen elections. We saw it after the 2004 election in Ohio, in Cuyahoga County, the largest county in Ohio. That's Cleveland. And the two top election officials in Cuyahoga County were sentenced to the maximum in jail because they gamed a post-election recount that was called for by the Green and the Libertarian parties together up there after the presidential election in 2004. They asked for a full statewide recount. And the way the recount law goes in Ohio, or at least did at the time, was that they would do a hand count of 3% of the ballots, and if the results do not match the machines, then they have to count the entire county. Well, those top election officials in Cuyahoga County gamed the 3% count. They counted them the night before. They faked, they're supposed to be random 3%. They faked the randomness, and they got caught. And they were sentenced to the maximum in jail. So you can game those post-election audits. That's why I say, you know what, here's a crazy idea. People vote. Let's count those ballots at the precinct on election night, publicly, in front of everyone, count them right then and there at the precinct before those ballots, and post the results right there at the precinct before those ballots are moved anywhere. That's the only way that we can actually oversee our own democracy, as far as I can tell. And I've been looking for an alternative for the past, 12, 13 years now, and so far I can't find an alternative. I think that's what we need to be able to do in order to have a real representative democracy in this country.
Well, that's the way we used to do it in the very old days, and 25 years ago.
Right.
I mean, that's the way it was done. And
yep.
I mean, of course, it can be rigged any way you want to do it. You don't have honest people counting. Depends on who does the counting, right?
So, well, no, not really. No. It doesn't, because if you do it publicly, I'm not talking about, in some of the cases in the old days, they would send all the ballots back to the central headquarters. It would be counted behind closed doors by insiders. And, yeah, they could cheat any way they wanted. But if you count them publicly at the precinct with the full public, all the parties, video cameras rolling, everybody watching, similar to what they do up in about 40% of the towns in New Hampshire, if you do that, it is very hard to game that type of a hand-counted system. I think it's the safest way to count. I think it's the best way to count, because people actually have confidence in their democracy when that happens. But it's a very difficult system to game, because you got to game a whole bunch of different precincts, and you have to have a whole bunch of people in on that conspiracy. I think that's the way to go. I think that's the most difficult way to game an election, is that type of an election. The computer systems that we have now, in 30 seconds, I can flip the results in Shasta County this June 7th if I want, and nobody would ever know.
Yeah,
so take
yeah.
your pick.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I actually voted for Deborah Bowen because she was willing to pull those machines in 2008, I think it was. And California voters should be very thankful for her, because she understood it. She knew what was going on, and she pulled those voting machines. So they're really not used in California as much. I mean, they're in a back room, so they basically have been shuffled off and, not used,
well,
which is a great thing.
That's the touch screen.
Yes.
And she deserves credit for getting rid of most, not all, but most of those machines from around California. But you mentioned, Doug, as when you were a poll worker, you were able to oversee the entire system until the paper ballot, the hand-marked paper ballot, was run through that Sequoia optical scan computer. And at that point, you have no idea if the computer counted it correctly or incorrectly. So Deborah Bowen got rid of the bulk of the touchscreen systems, but unfortunately, the entire state, we're still stuck with those optical scan computers that got it completely wrong in Palm Beach County, Florida, a few years ago, and we'll still get it wrong again, or at least they might, who knows, unless we bother to, count the ballots.
Yeah, well, it would be very easy to include a little Wi-Fi chip on the board of any one of those, and have some sort of agent just sit outside the polling place. He could easily adjust anything from his laptop, you know, if you thought about it. So
it's even easier than that, Doug. I hate to tell you, but it's even easier than that. All you got to do is flip the central tabulator when all of those numbers come together at the county headquarters, and an insider can do it, like I say, in 30 seconds flat. They can switch those numbers to be anything they want them to be.
Well, now I feel so much safer in my vote. I'm welcome. With you. I've been questioning right along with you all these years, and I think it was the Princeton study said that George Bush's 2004 victory, according to all the polling and everything that they could monitor, was like 300,000 to 1 possibility. So.
Yeah.
But John Kerry, who is still sitting on a pile of money, he just rolled over.
Over. So. And that's why you had the Greens and the Libertarians had to step in Ohio and ask for that recount that was subsequently gamed. So you got to get it right on election night. You can't wait till afterwards. You can't hope for a recount. You can't hope that, you know, somehow the magical election fairy is going to keep things safe for you. We've got a real problem in this system and in this country and with our system, and we need to change that. And we can't wait until the week or two before the election, or after the election results come in, and you're unhappy because your candidate did not win. You got to do the fight all year long when we're not in the middle of an election season. You have to fight. That's the time to change the system and get rid of these god-awful voting machines and voting tabulators, paper ballot tabulators that we still use, even in this state, even after Deborah Bowen.
Well, let's switch gears here, because I had an interesting guest a couple of weeks ago, and you may know him, Dr. Robert Epstein. He did a peer-reviewed study, not just him, but, a whole group of his colleagues. They did a study, and they determined that Google could decide almost any election in the world. They have that ability with their search engines, and they're so ubiquitous. So, and it's just like we're talking about these little black box, tabulators. It's the same thing. Because those pages disappear, and all those pages are set out individually for you, and you're being analyzed and targeted. And from his study, they basically said that Google could determine the outcome of any election in the world. And which is worrisome, because we have people like Eric Schmidt of Google and Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg. This is how they make their riches. So what's to prevent some huge pack from saying, well, listen, we got 100 million here. If you can kind of rig that one there and rig this one here, if anybody, because I know the explanation, and I don't know. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
I'd seen the headlines. I hadn't gotten to read the study, and I don't know Dr. Epstein, so I haven't specifically talked to him, but yeah, that's not surprising at all. I mean, there's an amazing amount of power that Google has, that Facebook has, to make things both appear and disappear. And it is troubling. I'm glad you, you said you had him on. I'm glad you had him on. Maybe I need to bring him on my show.
He's a great guy, highly respected, Berkeley, I believe. Or Stanford, I'm not sure now which, but great guy, a lot of information, and scary. And he only went public because it scared the hell out of him, because he's looking at the results. He can't even believe his own results. And in some cases, it was funny, because I had read, the general statements that were part of the study, and in there he said, well, some demographics are even more likely to be influenced by that. And on the show, I asked him, and he says, well, it's conservative Republicans. So I said, well, I think I get that. There is a gullibility factor. I mean, just look at conservative Republicans and Donald Trump. There's a gullibility factor.
Yep. You're right. You can get those clowns to believe anything. And that's kind of what has happened this year. And sort of to tie those dots together, there was a story that came out this week about Facebook and the notion that Facebook was somehow tamping down conservative, so-called, I don't even like using that word conservative because they're not conservative, but right-wing related news stories. And I think the evidence actually is a lot less than it appeared to be as originally reported. But of course, the right wingers, they are up in arms. Oh, Facebook is censoring us, is keeping our stories from going out. Now, even if the story when it came out originally, I said, this does not make sense. This sounds like a bunch of BS to me, actually. But the fact is, they could do it if they wanted to do it, and that's disturbing. So I understand that. Of course, once the evidence comes out that no, that actually did not really happen, you would think they would move on. But no, I'm sure we're going to now be hearing about hearings in the Congress, with Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg are going to be called up on the carpet about this, and the Republicans are not going to rest until somebody goes to jail or whatever nonsense, because they are so gullible. You know, they still believe the Planned Parenthood is selling baby parts, and whatever, and that Acorn was stealing elections, and that there's massive Democratic voter fraud going on. Yeah, they are chumps and dupes and suckers, and that's exactly how you get a Donald Trump to rise to the top amongst that group.
Yeah, and we think, and I know personally, Facebook does censor, and I've been censored once, and I didn't even understand it. There was no explanation for it. They just blocked one of my posts, and there's nobody, who do you appeal to, Wait a minute, my rights have been violated. But they haven't, of course, because you've signed, they can do whatever they want to you and with your information. And that's how they make their money, is targeting people. Same with Google. They don't make any money from their search engine. They make money by targeting individuals for advertisers. That's how they make their money. So
that's
and it wouldn't be a stretch to have an advertiser or a PAC hire them to maybe, you don't know. There's no accounting, and there's no way to know. That's why I brought that up, because I thought it was pretty scary.
If something is free, you are the product. And that's, that's the case. People think they get to use Facebook for free, Google for free. You can use it for free because you are the product. You are the one that is being sold to their customers, to their clients. And so, you're absolutely right. On the other hand, if we had a corporate media who actually reported what the hell was actually going on and actually did fact-checking and actually called out the liars, frauds, and phonies, we'd have a much smarter electorate who wouldn't be so easily duped, frankly.
That's true. But there's the statistic is 50% of the American public is below average intelligence.
Well, those are my people, Doug.
I know. You and the Donald. And,
that's right.
Those are
that's
my
right.
people. And I love these taco shells. Just so
that's
crazy.
Right.
This whole primary has just been so goofy. It's approaching that Colosseum, the Roman Colosseum concept. I mean, it's just infotainment. It's almost reality TV, if you can call it that. It's crazy.
Well, we let that happen. We let that happen. I mean, it's been amazing. Since the day that Donald Trump got into the race in June 15, 2015, I have been warning, yelling, and screaming, and letting people, you know, when people thought that it was a joke, oh, he's not really going to run, he would, and if he does run, he's not going to do well, and, you know, and he could never win the nomination. I've been jumping up and down with my hair on fire since June 15, saying, no, this guy is exactly what the Republican media, the Republican electorate has been trained to respond to. He is going to do very well. And our, you know, the great pundits who are paid so much money on the corporate media to tell us what's going on and to predict the future and to tell us all, they were all completely wrong. If you had listened to the broadcast every day since he got in, you would have known that, yes, Donald Trump was going to do well. There was almost nothing to stop him from winning the nomination. And I have been trying to, so I got that one right, and I've been trying to let people know, specifically Democrats who are gleeful about Donald Trump becoming the nominee, who think, oh, Democrats are going to do great against him. Newsflash, be careful what you wish for, Democrats. There is every reason to believe that Donald Trump is going to do very, very well against Hillary Clinton if she's the nominee. And these polls over the past week showing them tied in these swing states, I think, once again underscores that. So do not underestimate Donald Trump, period, particularly when we've got a media that is so bad at calling him out on being a pathological and probably a sociopathic liar.
Well, we've got about a minute and a half left, and so looking at Trump, he originally, you know, came on as the outsider, and that was his great appeal, right? Or that was some of his appeal. But what do you think? Now he's going to turn to the establishment, and they're all going to latch onto him because he's sellable. He's electable.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And they're already getting behind him. The Republican Party, they're all getting in line. They're all coalescing around him. He's going to start saying stuff that is going to appeal not just to the crazy right-wing Republicans, but will also appeal to independents and even some Democrats. He is a very, very dangerous candidate. You should misunderestimate him at your own peril. And, you know, I keep saying that over and over again, and that's one of the reasons I keep pointing to these polls that says, you know, hey, look, Bernie Sanders does better against Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton does, and I think that really is something that voters ought to keep in mind, at least Democratic voters, if they would prefer to see a Democrat in the White House rather than President Trump in the White House this November.
Scary thought, very scary thought. And, well, we are basically out of time, and I want to thank you, Brad Freeman, for being on Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling us with us again. Thank you. It's always great to talk to you. You have so much information, and I know our listeners are going to appreciate everything you've said here. So thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Really appreciate it. Great to be on KKRN, and just to underscore the importance of community radio and supporting community radio. So my thanks to KKRN, and my thanks to you, Doug, for what you continue to do. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
You too. Keep the Brad blog going and the Bradcast and all that you're doing. I really appreciate your work also. So I'll have to say goodbye now because we're out of time. Thanks a lot, Brad. You've been listening to Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling. Our guest has been Brad Freeman, renowned blogger and investigative journalist at thebradblog.com, and I will place links along with the archives of this show on our website at kkrn.org. You can find them at kkrn.org/shows/unspun. Once again, thank you again, Brad Freeman, for being on Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling. Next week on Unspun, we'll have Greg Palast, investigative journalist extraordinaire. He's been on with us before. We're going to talk about voting some more, and he's another investigative journalist that's been shining a light on voting irregularities for several years. So tune in 9 a.m. Saturdays and 4 p.m. Wednesdays to hear Unspun, an Experiment in Truth-Telling.